Discover nature by design for a beautiful view. Snows knows how to make it all easy for you. When it comes to landscaping and gardening, who knows how to create the perfect scene? Snow knows Garden Center.
Of the Snow Nose Gardening Show. I'm Norm Carlson.
And I'm Scott Price.
We're here on this beautiful Saturday morning. It's going to be a little bit cooler than it has been over the last few days. It's a good day to get out and get things ready, put some finishing touches on some of the patio and deck area and things like that in preparation for all the grilling and entertaining and stuff that goes on with the Memorial Day weekend or if you've got a project that you need to kind of get started on. It's a great time to go ahead and do that also. Even though it's, the official or unofficial start of summer this weekend, it's still a great time to be working in the garden, making some additions and doing some enhancements out in the landscape and really getting things going. So if anything that we can help you out with in that regard, any questions that you have with your lawn, your trees and shrubs, your annuals, vegetables, houseplants, your lawn, just anything with leaves and roots, or anything crawling around on stuff with leaves and roots, give us a call at 977-1070. We'd be glad to help you out and get you some great information on ways that you can be successful with your outdoor projects.
That's right. Last night I was out. I know I shouldn't have been doing it, but I mowed the grass during the rain and made a big old mess. I mean, what a big mess. So today I get to go and mow it again to get all the clumps and all the clods and all that stuff up. So
clean up the mess.
That's right. I had a small window of opportunity. I'm like, I need to mow, and I went and did it. And kind of this morning when I got up by the light of day, wish I hadn't.
And it really is tricky, with the kind of weather we've been having lately, trying to find the windows to get things done. The next couple of days are going to be really good. And then, we get into the first of next week. And, of course, Monday's a holiday, but it's also supposed to be like 95 degrees.
Right. And that 14, 15 degrees, from 80 to 95 is an awful big difference.
It really is.
So today is a great day to get out there and do it. Normally this time of year, the season's starting to kind of wind down a little bit. But right now, with the ground moisture that we have in place from a very wet season with still a few nice cool days and some cool evenings, I think you've still got a great chance to get out and get caught back up on those things you needed to do, and then plan ahead on the things that are right around the corner that need to be done. Last week when I was in, I talked about needing to get my fungicide down. Well, guess what? I still need to get my fungicide down. And that's why it's so important that you do plan ahead for some of these things. After I read the label, I want to make sure that the product is as effective as it can be. So I had to not only coordinate my schedule, time that I was going to be at home, but I had to, kind of be a little forecaster and look at what the rain was going to do. They were calling for showers and they weren't calling for showers, and they called for them and they didn't happen. Then they didn't call for them and they did happen. So, that's where it gets very difficult. So one of the things you may want to consider, and this is something I suggest to a lot of my clients, is on very timing-specific activities, like putting down some of your weed control, doing some of your fungicide applications, doing some of your insect applications, you are often very well served to go with a professional company to have them do those for you.
Right.
For a couple of reasons. Number one, they are hitting that timing window. They know what the timing window. They know what the timing window is for effective control, as well as know the most effective product. Mm-hmm. The products that are available to them are often way more effective than what you can buy over the counter. They have the appropriately calibrated equipment for, delivering it, and they can do it 2 to 3 times faster than you ever could.
Right.
So as I look at it, if I'm going to spray my lawn, which is a very small lawn, I only have, maybe 8,000, 9,000 square feet. If I go to look at spraying my lawn, I need to be very careful in how I'm going to put that product down. With a normal pump sprayer, I'm going to have to go back and fill that pump sprayer up, you know, three or four times. I do have a backpack sprayer, which I spent, you know, $150 on a backpack sprayer that goes on my back. But as I'm walking around doing it, I still have to fill it up a couple of times. And the delivery of the product, it's hard to even make sure I'm not overlapping too much or, you know, underlapping or leaving spaces. It's just difficult to do. Not only is it hard physically, you got to remember all that. You got to then have that chemical. That one thing about chemicals is, remember, they don't last forever.
That's
so
right.
You go and you buy a bottle. It sits on the garage shelf, you know, for 3 years and you never use it. Then you look at it, it's expired or it's gotten frozen a couple times and you throw it away. So, you know, there's nothing sustainable or nothing smart about many of those practices. So that's why if there's something that's very timing specific, if there's something that really needs to be done, you know, contracting with a spray company or with a company who, like us, Snows, of course, does these services, we can come out and take care of it for a very small dollar, especially compared to the amount of aggravation, the cost of the chemical, the inconsistency of your return on your investment, and the inefficiency of it. So that's something you can keep in mind. Norman did this for years and years, so he can speak, you know, a little more clearly than I can about it. Corbin is handling those now. Cindy and Corbin can definitely help you out. So if you've had some of those fungus problems, insect problems, disease problems, you know, maybe have us just come by for a free consultation. We're still offering our free consults. Well, we'll come and stop by your yard. One of the things that I think is interesting is, as we talk about our free consultations, everybody thought it was, you know, for putting new plants in. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be that. If you have moved into a new house and you don't even know what plants you've just, you know, inherited, if you've got a scenario where you've got some maintenance issues that you're not sure what's going on, give us a call. And, you know, Cindy or myself or Dwayne or one of us who's out on the road all the time will be more than happy to stop by, take a look. We can give you some suggestions for what you need to do. If you want to do the project yourself, we'll give you a roadmap and a shopping list. If you want us to do it, of course, we'll give you a you know, no charge quote as to what it would take care, you know, what it would take to get it done. So these are the services that we offer, and all, you know, the reason we're doing all this is because we just want you to have success.
That's right, and you know, there's so much of it is information, and with the many resources that we have available to us now, it's easier than ever to find information on a lot of the things that are, you know, that are going on out in the garden. Find advice on what to do and everything, but so often, you know, when you're looking at websites and things like that, it's from Missouri or Wisconsin or Texas or Kentucky, where, you know, sometimes, you know, the climate conditions and the soil conditions and the plant types and everything are kind of similar to here, but there's still a lot of variation in what's going on that can really affect, you know, what products you're using, how effective some of those things are going to be, the timing on some of those applications and things like that. So while a lot of these resources help, there's still a lot to be said for getting local information and local experience with what's going on and being able to tap into somebody that really knows what's going on in this area with the plants that we grow in Charlottesville, the kind of climate that we have here in Charlottesville, which is very different from, you know, from what's going on in Fluvanna and Green. It's different in, you know, downtown Charlottesville from the conditions in Crozet or down in Scottsville. Even just those, you know, those minor geographic changes can represent a lot as far as growing conditions, what kinds of microclimates are generated out in the garden. So it really is good to be able to tap into a resource that's familiar with how those factors change based on where you're located. And, you know, we're glad to come out and help you out with any of that, any problems that you're seeing. And just give us a call. We'd be glad to come by and look at it and help you out with it. Like I say, we can come out and take care of it for you. We can advise you on what to use, how to use it, and all of that if you want to do the work yourself. But the key is being able to do these things in a way that, number one, is going to be safe. I mean, that's the top priority in any of this. We don't, you know, we want to make sure that it's safe for the environment, it's safe for you, it's safe for your kids and your pets and all of that. And we also want to make sure that you know, whatever we're telling you to do or what we're doing for you is going to be effective so that you what you're trying to accomplish actually happens.
Yeah, and one of the other things that I think is, you know, pretty amazing, and it really does help you when you get collective experience, you know, what ends up happening. There's not a week that goes by that, you know, the phone doesn't ring and Norman picks it up. And I'm like, Norman, I'm seeing so-and-so out here, and I've seen it on two jobs so far today. What's going on? Well, it's probably more like a day, every day. You know, it's very common that, you know, we're out there. Just to give you an example, I drive about 40 to 50,000 miles a year in Charlottesville, you know, just driving back and forth from one place to the other. I'm out constantly. Cindy is constantly on the road. Dwayne is constantly out from one end of the county to the other, not only this county, but all the surrounding counties. So we're able to see a lot of stuff going on out there that, you know, we, if you've got it, we've probably seen it. Mm-hmm. And if you've got it and we haven't seen it, we even want to see it more.
That's right.
So remember that we definitely can stop by. If you'd like to, also with digital photography and the ability to communicate over the internet, you know, remember that that side of our business is open 24/7 at www.snowknows.com. I always have to slow down when I say that. And I speak slower when I say snow. knows.com because you don't want to put an S in the middle. So, you know, feel free to go on that, send us some information. You can send it to Norman Carlson at snowknows.price. See, I need to slow down again. Norman Carlson at snowknows.com. Mm-hmm. How was that? Or Scott Price at snowknows.com or Cindy Connor at snowknows.com or Dwayne Snow at snowknows.com or Corbin Snow at snowknows.com. And we're more than happy to take a look at those, see if we can help you. That's a very efficient, effective way to do it. Of course, bringing it into the garden center is a great way for us to get hands-on experience and to be able to physically see it. But there, sometimes it would really benefit for you to maybe bring in the sample of the plant as well as maybe a few pictures of it before mm-hmm. you took the sample and its condition that it's in and the site that it came from. Be sure that when you bring those samples that, you know, it's a fresh sample or it's a general sample from all over the plant, not just one piece. Or like I've done recently, brought a sample in and I put it in a plastic bag and I forgot it in the back of my car for 3 days. And then I brought it in and there was all kinds of cultures growing in there that were not on the plant when I took it, the sample. So
that's right. And, you know, it's important to bring in, like Scott says, a representative sample of you know, kind of general conditions on the plant. One of the hardest things is you know, when we have somebody that makes the effort to come on out to the garden center and bring us a sample, and all they bring is a dead branch. And we're looking at it and saying, well, there's not a lot I can tell you from this other than it's dead. And it's just because there's not enough, there aren't enough symptoms and signs of the problem that are left in order for us to make a good determination as to what happened. It's best if we can see, you know, if we're trying not to figure out what happened, but looking at what's happening on the plant and where you see, you know, good foliage that's being damaged, and then some of the damaged foliage. And if we can see kind of that cross-section of how the problem is progressing in the plant, we're able to tell a lot more about what's going on, and it's much more likely that we're going to see that key little indicator that tells us, ah, yes, that's what it is.
Yeah, and not only on that, not only for your pathogen problems, your insects, disease, or funguses, but also even on plant identification. I had a really great experience a few weeks ago during our EcoFest with a couple that came in, and they started describing me all these plants that they really, really liked. Well, we would try to narrow them down, and we took a walk through the garden center, and, you know, we got into a source of maybe this is what it is or maybe this is what you're talking about. But the next day the next week she literally sent me a picture of a few of these plants that she really wanted in her garden. And instantly seeing those pictures, I was able to identify it. So we had talked for I know an hour that day about a few plants that she's seen. It's kind of drooping and weeping in its characteristic, and you know, it had a pretty white flower and it was this and that and the other. And we thought we narrowed it down. And, you know, I suggested a weeping cherry. Well, as soon as I then saw the picture of what the plant was, I realized that it was a weeping pussy willow she was talking about, not a weeping cherry. So it was just great to be able to have that level of communication.
Right.
So it's so easy now in your garden to be able to take those digital pictures. You know, you can send them with your phone in a few seconds. You can send them through the web, no problem at all. Another thing that I've done that has really helped me at home is I've gone through my garden and basically cataloged my plant material. I've taken pictures of them during the winter, during the summer, during, you know, when they're looking good, when they're not looking good. I use these all the time, you know, as I speak with clients, because one of the problems is as you look through picture books of plant material, you typically see beautiful specimens or, you know, a 150-year-old oak tree is what they're showing you a picture of. And that willow oak at 5 years old looks dramatically different than a 150-year-old willow oak.
Especially willow oaks. Willow oaks never look good when they're young.
They just look silly when they're young, but man, do they turn into majestic trees.
Beautiful.
So one of the things that really helps is to do that in your garden, especially later on. The time you're going to enjoy it is when you have that problem. And you can come in and say, here's what it looked like last spring. Here was the bloom. Here's what was going on. And here's what it looks like now. And then a lot of times we can do that. But most of the pathogen problems, disease, insect, fungus, a lot of those are very site-specific, mm-hmm. and they're very environmentally specific. So that's why it's important you not only, you know, describe to us what's happening to the plant, but describe to us what's happening around the plant.
Right.
And I think that's what I called Norman twice this week with the same sample. Plants had come out with beautiful, beautiful growth, and then they had starting to die off, and we're starting to see some of that new growth shrivel up and just sporadically across the plant. Well, we came to a conclusion that we thought that the problem is probably they're planted in very heavy clay and that there's just too much water, you know, down there in the bottom of that. Well, the next day, I got the shovel out of the back of the truck and went over and dug two of those plants up, and they were just standing in water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things we're seeing a whole lot of this year. A few months ago, when the plants were, you know, starting to initiate growth, they pushed out a huge amount of growth because the conditions were very moist, you know, all around, as well as, the temperature was perfect. Well, now the top of the ground starting to dry out. So those upper roots are, you know, in a drier condition, but those deeper roots are sitting down there still in kind of soup. And that really has ended up being a problem. So
not only that, but as that new growth has expanded and the plant has really grown, it's needed additional roots to support that new growth and be able to draw up enough moisture to keep it going. And with those wet, soggy conditions down there in the soil, roots need oxygen just as much as we do. And they start to drown and aren't able to, even though there's plenty of water there, they can't absorb it efficiently, get it up to the top of the plant, up to the leaves, and the first thing to go is that new tender growth. So that new tender growth starts to die off, and you start wondering, you know, what's going on? Do I need to water more? But it's the fact that there's too much water down there that's causing the plant to essentially jettison that new growth, sacrifice it in the name of survival.
That's exactly what was going on.
Well, we got to take a quick break for the news, but we will be back in a few minutes with more of the Snow Nose Garden Show here on AM 1070 WINA.
Good morning and welcome back to the Snow Nose Calling Garden Show. I'm Scott Price.
And I'm Norm Carlson.
And we're taking your calls here at 977-1070. Give us a call because this show sure is boring sitting here talking to Norman all day long unless y'all call in. So, Norman, how are the kids?
Big and hungry.
How's the wife?
Doing good.
How's the dog?
You got no dog.
You got cats.
I got cats.
So, what else is up?
It's raining.
Okay, see, y'all just want to... Hey, look, we got a phone call out of that. Daggone it. Hey, we actually do have a few exciting things to talk about. There are some fabulous plants at the Garden Center. There are some just
really
wonderful
are.
Things that are coming in. And that's why... Yeah, I've been doing this forever. And, you know, I'm never bored with plant material because there's always something new and exciting coming out. There's something to try. There's those old fashions that, you know, you kind of forget about.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you know, they come back in the Garden Center and it's like, wow. If you want a plant that you'll be happy with for a very long period of time, we have something in stock right now that it's few and far between when we get them in. But when we get them in, all of a sudden I walk through the nursery, I see them, and then every plant I draw for the next few weeks has them in it. So it's flowering almond, and this is a plant that you probably haven't seen very often. It's not an almond like a nut. What's the botanical name, Norman? It's prunus.
Yeah, it's a prunus. It's in the – I forget what the
– Exocart – no, I don't know.
No, it's something really weird.
It's a prunus, so that means it's in like a cherry tree family, and it has these teeny tiny little pink rosette blossoms that each blossom is probably the size of your fingernail, but each one will have probably, I'd say, 150 petals on it when it blooms. And it blooms up the stem. So the neat thing about it is it's kind of a stemmy, sticky-looking plant. Very uninspiring when it's not blooming. So I don't know if you want to set this, you know, as your premium, you know, number one specimen plant. But if you mix it into a perennial border or a flowering border, when this thing comes into flower in the spring, it is just breathtaking. The other thing I love about it is the buds are formed. It bloomed this spring. The buds are forming now for next year. After they get chilled, anywhere after about January, you can go and clip a few of these stems, take them inside, stick them in a vase of water, and in a few weeks, they'll just pop into bloom in the house. So it is a fantastic plant. Like I say, it's one of those old fashions that we really don't see that much. As I was walking through the garden center, you know, I was reminded today of mock orange that's out there. That is a fantastic blooming plant material, gorgeous, fragrant blossom. The Altheas, which I think everybody forgets about the Althea or the hardy hibiscus. Those are the ones that will be blooming here in the next few weeks that come back year after year. Rose of Sharon is its other name. Absolutely fantastic plant. We do
one of those great. It's a great alternative if you maybe aren't real a big fan of crepe myrtles. They're a small scale tree, large scale shrub that will bloom most of the summer.
Right.
And just a great, great plant for a small type scenario. Just a really, really wanted, and nothing gets on them.
Yeah, and I had a client the other day who was in, and they were from Taiwan, and you know that's their homeland, and they just saw the tropical hibiscus, and they were like, oh, I love those. And I'm like, well, they're annuals. You can grow them in containers and take them in and out. But then I took and showed them the Althea, which you know looks like a hydrangea, a hibiscus blossom. It's just a little bit smaller. I'm like, this is something that'll just keep coming back year after year. So you know, keep those old fashions in mind, and you know, don't be afraid to use them and explore them. And if you want a flowering almond, you better come quick.
That's right. They don't last long. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Gardening Show.
Good morning. I do have a flowering almond, and it is beautiful, but mine has finished blooming already.
Yeah, they're early in the spring, you know, so it's one of those that, once again, if you walk by it in the garden center right now, you would not be inspired. But if you saw it a few weeks ago when it bloomed, you know, you would love it. So it's one just to, you know, one to add to the mix is the way I like to think about it.
Yeah, so I shouldn't prune it back now. I mean, I'd cut off. Can I prune it back now that it's finished blooming?
This is actually the best time to prune it because what happens is, remember, in the next few weeks, it's going to be putting on new growth. Now, this is an excellent call because with many of these old-fashioned flowering plants, they bloom best on new wood. So the way I like to do that is about every third year, I completely remove a third of the plant. So what happens is I go down deep in the plant and I remove some of the oldest stems, some of the real barky and corky ones or anything that looks like it has any damage. And then that'll allow new growth to come kind of up and around it. The way to think about this is almost every 10 years, you're rejuvenating that plant 100% if you follow this rule.
Okay, you're saying thin it out as well as cut it back.
That's exactly right. And
okay,
when
that really wasn't my question, but I was listening while you were entertaining that on the radio.
Well, good. That was a great question. What's your real question?
My real question is, I have asters to get this black, sooty looking stuff on the leaves every year, and they don't do very well. And it already has it on there this year, so I'm wondering what I do. And also, I have a canna. Do I cut it back after it blooms?
Yeah, with the asters, it sounds like you've got some aphids or scale that's gotten in there. Both are very common insects. And what they do is they suck the juices out of the plant. And probably the best way to describe this is the plant's essentially
bleed.
Blood pressure
yep.
is higher than what the insect's digestive system can handle. So when it attaches to the plant and starts siphoning off the juices, the interior pressure from the plant pushes them literally through the insect, and it drops out as this honeydew secretion that gets all over the leaves, and then you get this black sooty mold that starts to grow on that secretion that's landed all over the leaves, and that's that black sticky stuff that you see all over there, which doesn't help the plant any, but that's not the primary issue. The primary issue is the insects that are on there that are causing it. And most of your garden sprays are going to do a good job at taking care of aphids, anything of pyrethrin, the Captain Jack's dead bug brew, for kind of an organic type remedy for it, or even some of the horticultural spray oils, although you got to make sure that you get one that's formulated for summer use. As well as winter. A lot of the oil sprays that are out there are formulated as dormant oils for use during the dormant season. But any of those
are
going to do.
A lot of seven. Would that take care of it?
The seven not so much. For that works great for caterpillars and beetles and things like that that feed on the foliage. And are literally eating the leaves because they work best the seven works best as a stomach poison that way.
Yeah. I like to think about you use seven on things if you're seeing them physically eat the leaf. If they're chomping on the leaves.
Chewing things.
Chewing things, right. Excellent,
right.
Yes.
Okay, but, very good. Now, what am I going to use for this black? I usually cut the asters back until the 4th of July, but they still have lots of that black sooty stuff on them. So what should I use?
Yeah, I would use either the pyrethrin or some of the Captain Jack's dead bug brew would be good options for
dead bug brew. All right, that's very good. Now, what about my canna that somebody gave me for Mother's Day? It has a yellow bloom on it with this light green color. It's not the dark kind. Do I cut the buds after they bloom, and then do I cut it down to the ground in the fall?
Is it a canna or a calla lily?
Canna, C-A-N-N-A.
Okay.
Yeah, those a good way to look at those is the more you deadhead them or remove those dead blooms, the more likely it's going to be to put off new buds. They'll bloom all summer long, right up until frost.
Right.
Okay.
But it makes the plant a lot more attractive and will help to encourage new flowering if you go through and remove the spent flowers and the little seed pods that
right.
can form.
And that's the most important part is removing also that seed pod, because the production of the seed pod takes a whole lot of additional energy from the plant.
Then
so,
fall, do I cut it down to the ground?
All the way, yeah. Take the flowering stem, where it came out of the ground, take it all the way down inside the plant. Leave the foliage there, to keep gaining photosynthetic energy, but take that cane or the stem that it's on all the way back.
Well, will the foliage eventually die when cold weather comes, though, right?
Right, right. Once frost hits it, it'll nip it back.
Do I wait until that happens and then cut it down to the ground?
I would. If you do it before then, it's going to try to regrow.
Right.
Because it's still warm out and, the soil temperatures are still warm. So it's going to try to send up new shoots, and that's going to really sap the reserves of the root system. So I would wait till the frost has nipped it back. And once that happens, it realizes that, hey, it's cold. I need to go to sleep now.
Well, thank you very much. I didn't mean to be so time-consuming.
Oh, not at all.
Excellent, excellent questions and a good range of stuff to talk about. So I appreciate you calling.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
And that's one thing to remember about the canna lilies is there's a ton of different varieties that are out there, some of which are completely hardy here and they're mm-hmm. fine, some of which are marginally hardy. And you may, if you want to be sure you preserve them, you have to lift the bulb every year, take it, and then plant it the following season, and some that are completely not hardy at all.
Right.
So that's why very often, if you get a florist plant, if a florist delivers you a hydrangea or a lily or something like that, chances are pretty good that sometimes those plants just are not going to make it, you know, outside. So it's worth a try, but, you know, just don't plan on that. So as you're shopping for those particular plants, look for the ones that are perennial that will come back year after year. And then speaking of perennials, we just got a huge order of perennials in. And this is, you know, the time of year that really, as you start to slow down on some of the other garden activities that you have, you know, getting in your perennial garden really is a great thing to do. You can add so much color and texture. It doesn't have to all be about the bloom. As I design with perennials, I'm always thinking about foliage texture. I'm thinking about foliage form. I'm thinking about foliage color as much as I am bloom, so that that garden, you know, looks good all those other weeks that the bloom's not there.
You almost want to look at perennials in a fairly similar way that you look at shrubs. You know, you think of, you know, a lot of people want perennials that are going to bloom all summer long, and there's just not very many of those that are out there. They're
few and far between.
So, you know, you need to look at, you know, perennials will only bloom for about a 4 to 6 week, maybe 8 week period, and then that's it. And you think, well, I don't want to plant something that's going to bloom for that short a time. But if you look at a lot of the shrubs that we use in the garden, the flowering shrubs that we have, that's about as long as a bloom season as you get out of those. Lilacs, you might, you know, you're lucky if you get 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Azaleas, if you get 3 weeks, you're doing really, really well.
Yep.
And perennials are kind of that same way. So not only do you want to look at, you know, what the bloom is on them, which, you know, is the really spectacular part, but you also want to look at what does the flower form do, or, you know, what does the foliage form do, rather, for the rest of the season. And there are a whole series of perennials that, you know, when they start to come into, when they come into bloom, the first thing I do is go out there and cut the flowers off.
That's right.
Because I don't like the flowers.
That's right.
I grow them primarily as a foliage plant.
And the other thing to think about is not only, you know, what Norman's saying in terms of the bloom time, but you really want to stagger that bloom time. So you need perennials that bloom, you know, early, middle, late. You need them so that there's kind of always something coming and always something going. And as you start to learn more about perennials, you can actually use that as an asset. You can take and maybe you use the color of a heuchera, which is a coral bell, that does have a very attractive little dainty blossom to it. But
no, it doesn't.
Well, it's, I like it.
That's one of the ones I was thinking of when I said, I go out there as soon as it comes in, cut the flowers off.
I like them. But, you know, what ends up happening is then you use that foliage as background for the most beautiful perennial area ever, and that one's called guara, which is another one Norman just absolutely hates.
Yeah, I'm not
but I like it.
It's a very rangy, very airy plant. Grows up, has very loose, very open texture to it, very fine texture. Gets, you know, little small flowers on it. For my taste, it's a little bit too rangy.
Norman
and open.
Has no taste. Norman has no taste. He likes evergreens and he likes conifers and he likes weird looking plants. Trust me. Listen to me. Guars are good plants. We're going to have a little fight here in a minute.
I know.
No, actually, and that's the funniest thing about perennials too, is that there's just so much diversity out there. I mean, you can get so many things happening in the garden. And this is where, you know, I really like the random single perennial just sitting amongst another group of things. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to do it in these humongous sweeps. And one of the things I often recommend is don't ever do perennials in huge sweeps unless you know that plant backwards and forwards. You know, unless you know how to take care of it, what it's going to do, how it's going to perform. You know, is it going to creep all over the garden? Is it going to stay in place? Is it going to reseed everywhere? Is it not?
Is it going to be consistent in its return every season?
Am I going to have to restake it? You know, every time a new bloom comes, do I have to stake that bloom to hold it up? You know, learn these plants before you start going crazy in quantity on them. Because then, you know, you can get so much diversity out of a plant that you know. You know what's going to happen, so you can design around that for when the plant looks great and when the plant doesn't look great. I've got a list of maybe 15 performing perennials that I use. These are the ones that I use very consistently because their foliage is good, their flower is good, they return consistently, they do really, really well. So in most of my design work, especially for larger scale work, my perennial palette is very controlled.
Guara.
No, I don't use guara in quantity. That's a great one to mix in.
That's
but
right.
Things like
That's
iris,
right.
You know, an iris, I love the foliage. I love the silvery color of the foliage. I love the vertical effect of it. The bloom is great. The way that they come back season after season. One of the best things about iris is you can put them just about anywhere in the garden because they're incredibly shallowly rooted. So you can plant them almost on top of other perennials that will come up around them. They don't compete. They don't want to come in and take over the space of something else. The other thing I really love about them is even now there are varieties of iris that repeat bloom.
Right.
So we've got Immortality, which is a white one that comes back again and again. They're the dwarf Chinese iris. There's so much diversity, you know, in that one plant. The same thing with as you get over into the other varieties of things like peonies. You know, peonies, that's a plant that 3 weeks ago you saw them all over the place and everybody was, oh, I need some peonies. Well, remember, you know, you plant them now for that growth for next year. Peonies are plants that do better the longer you leave them alone. You need to plant them, leave them in that spot, not move them around. It's one of the few perennials that you don't want to dig and divide and move all over the place. They just get better and better and better with age. So, you know, now's a great time of an excellent selection of peonies out there that, you know, you can put in now and enjoy for years and years to come with very little maintenance.
And literally for decades. I mean, peony is one of those plants that, you know, you get into some of the gardens that have been in for 40, 50, 60, 70 years. The peonies and the iris just keep coming back and coming back and coming back, and they do nothing but get better with age. I was actually over at a garden over in Mosby Mountain, new subdivision, but the homeowner had these iris that she had gotten. They were actually from her grandmother. It was a variety that this was their third generation in the family and about their, I don't know, 10th, 12th garden that they'd been in, you know, that they just, you know, kept moving, you know, of a few of these rhizomes from garden in place to place over all these generations over like 75 or 80 years. And they were, you know, you could tell it was an old heirloom like bloom. You could tell it wasn't, you know, it was definitely an iris, had all that, the iris form, but yet the flower form was quite a bit different from a lot of the varieties that you see now, but it was earlier than most of the ones that we have now, but just absolutely spectacular in this clump.
And that's the other great thing about perennials is remember, you know, you can really share them with your friends over time. And it's something that I love to see people, you know, pass plants from to each other, the things that you can take some seeds from or you can take some cuttings from or you can take a little division off these plants. So that's a great thing about starting to grow some of these perennials. And as I mentioned, I love just to find a spot. There's a real famous landscape architect, Gertrude Jekyll, and she said that, you know, perennials are the icing on top of the cake. And the thing is, you don't want your cake covered with icing. You want to spot it all over the place. And you need to move your perennials around the garden and find that happy spot. Find out where they really are performing. Don't stretch it. Don't force it. Don't try to make it happen. But when you find the spot, the right plant in the right place, then there's no worries.
Right. And I've got a lady that we did a lot of work for that we were a good friend that is great about doing that. She'll get a few perennials in every year that she adds to the garden, puts them out there and say, okay, what are you going to do for me?
Yep.
And the ones that, you know, out of that, usually, you know, if you add 10, you might get three that do really, really well. The other ones, you know, you kind of, well, all right, we've, you know, maybe move them somewhere else, see if they're going to do better somewhere else. But you take those three that did really, really well, and okay, those are the ones that we're going to bring in more of, and just keep adding that way. Do a little bit of trial and error, and it's very easy to do. They're, you know, relatively inexpensive, you know, easy to add and subtract that way. And over the years, they really do become like a trusted old friend each spring when they come back. And you think, you know, you go out there in the early spring, hey, it's time for this plant to come back. You go out there, and sure enough, there it is. It's coming back. you start to see it poking its head up above the ground, and then the flowers come, and it really is like seeing a good, trusted old friend come back to the garden each year.
So coming out to the Garden Center, we have an excellent selection of perennials in right now, great selection of annuals. We got some fantastic old woody shrubs, all kinds of things going on. As we're closing the show up today, we do want to wish a happy birthday to Carlton Shiflett. So Carlton, you have yourself a great birthday today. Thanks for listening to the Snow Nose Garden Show, and Norman will wrap us out of here.
All right, we'll be open today till 5. We'll be closed tomorrow. And for Memorial Day, we will be closing a little bit early. We'll be open from 8 to 3. So come out and see us this weekend. And we'll see you right back here next Saturday on the Snow Nose Gardening Show.